It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law.
See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yes, everybody. Welcome back to the Full Time Devils podcast. My name is Stephen Allison, joined by Joshy and by Dave. And what are we talking about today, lads?
I don't know. You tell us.
All right. Yeah, about how everything's back to normal and everyone's having fun, or that we're all still stuck at home. And
yeah, we're raising just £2 a month. You can get Dave an haircut. Yeah, see, Joshy's gone with what I've gone with.
Yeah, it was a mistake. Honestly, I was trying to I tidied everything up and it looked great. And then a couple of weeks later, I tried it again and I got a bit too ambitious and took a massive chunk out the front. And there was no rescuing it other than just taking the whole thing off.
Measure twice, it cut once and all that lot.
Painful times, but yeah, it's all right. I'm getting used to it.
Right, so there are a few things on the agenda. We can be talking about Angel Gomez and what's going on with that. That seems to have heated up in the last few days. Project Restart. I think you could probably drop an S out of that. And yeah, you're nearly there. Joshy.
What's up?
Let's tell everyone why it's such a fucking monumentally stupid idea that they're definitely going to do.
What, Project Restart?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, we saw, what did we see the other day? Turn your face when tackled, right? And yeah. I actually thought that was a joke because someone posted it in a WhatsApp group. And then I was like responding with, yeah, and then we'll sanitize players, full body sanitation at halftime and full body sanitation whenever
they're like a car wash.
Yeah. After every tackle, and they went, no, that is a real suggestion that's come through, and I had to go and check on Twitter. So, I mean, it's getting ludicrous, isn't it? It's just ludicrous. Why would you risk it? I mean, we saw that this is not sport related, but there was a tube worker maybe was spat at, and then she ended up getting COVID, and then she died from it. So that's one individual where, I'm not saying players are going to be spitting at each other deliberately, but if you've got that level of kind of risk involved, why would you do it for a game where it's, you're not even going to get, it's not even going to be a recognizable game, right? If you're introducing all these other rules. So for me, and I said it the first sort of podcast I did, I think it was in February, the season 2019-2020 is done. It has to be just put to one side, and preparation now has to begin for the following season. So next season, because we know that this, I can certainly tell you now that we're not out of the first wave, and we will start seeing upticks, and we will see a second wave and a third wave or whatever, because of many reasons in the UK of how this has been managed. So for me, the Premier League needs to start thinking, and the FA needs to start thinking about next season. We need to build in flexibility into the program. So if the government then goes, right, actually, we're now in lockdown for November, December and January, right? Because then that's done. So what do? Maybe you cancel the League Cup for next year, or maybe even the FA Cup. And then you're thinking about Europe and you're going, how can you have a Champions League season with teams flying around everywhere, potentially fans, because we also know fans are idiots and we're all going to, you know, we all want to, look, let's get it straight. We all want to go and watch matches. We all want to be there seeing our team play football. But we know as well that it's kind of a lower priority compared to actually what's happening in real world. But you're going to get a small but significant minority who will turn up to matches, who will fly and see their teams across Europe. And what about countries where they've got a flight lockdown? You know, what are the legalities of it? What about players' wishes? I mean, there's so many things to think about. The layer upon layer and layer of complexity is ridiculous. And then you get the Premier League saying, oh, if an individual player tests positive, they have to self-isolate, but the rest of the squad doesn't. And I'm kind of going, so who is the medical advisor that's given them that as advice to give out, which is contrary to what we're saying about the general population, right? Because you can't have one situation where the training is all distanced and everyone is sanitizing and everything, and then suddenly you go into a match and you're full contact and whatnot. So there's just too much complexity, too much risk. My only thought is they're just doing this to get to the point where they can say they've done as much as possible to see what can be done feasibly for a reason for the season to restart before then they then cancel it. Because then I don't know the legalities and contracts around, you know, Premier League and the TV broadcasting rights and all that kind of stuff. But for me, it just seems silly. It's way too silly now, isn't it? For me anyway.
I think you're right on one front with that. It does feel like the fact that they chose to not even have ending this early on the table for the first three or four meetings that they had almost seems to me like they're putting in a paper trail for when this eventually does end up in litigation over the hundreds of millions of pounds owed or not owed by the TV rights companies. I feel like the Premier League is right in their notes to say, as you can see, we didn't even mention it in the first 4 weeks. Then we sort of had it as any other business at one of the meetings. And then, you know, as time went on, it became more and more obvious that this was going to have to happen. But as you can see, we did everything that we could to try and get this to restart. Therefore, pay us the money. I'm sure that's what they're doing at the moment. Because like you said, some of the stuff that's coming out, turn your face as you're tackling and, you know, spitting won't be allowed and extra subs and maybe we don't even have 45 minute long matches. And you're like, this isn't the game. If you can't play it how everybody started it back in August, you can't play it. You know, neutral venues and no relegation and promote the free teams from promotion spots in the Championship. Where does it end? Where does common sense come into this? It's nonsense.
I don't think there is any common sense when it's money involved, though. You look at the Premier League, they run three leagues. In the Premier League 2, and the Under 18 Premier League. Now, one of them generates millions and millions and millions of pounds. You get paid off TV broadcasters, like you've said. That's still up in the air of it's going to go on. The other two have been cancelled because there's not the money involved. It's all about the players' safety. They can't be training, can't be doing this. So why is it all about the players' safety for them and then not for the Premier League? Because at the end of the day, all the players are the same. It's nothing to do with the age groups because we know, you know, today that in the reserves, the under-23s, first team players playing that. So I just don't understand why they're not just coming out and saying, listen, we know, because everyone knows it's all about the money. Mm. And then they're going to start saying, well, we're playing behind closed doors. But that won't happen because, like you were saying earlier, fans will go try and get in. What was it? It's been that long ago. Was it LASK, the last game we played away?
It was, allegedly. Yeah. I mean, I was pretty drunk, so I struggled to remember.
Fans were outside. Imagine that game was at Old Trafford and it was behind closed doors. How many people do you think have been outside?
A lot. Plenty, yeah.
So even if you have a neutral venue, Villa Park, for example, just at the top of my head.
I mean,
do you think people aren't going to go outside and just just for the chance they might be able to get in. There's going to be hundreds of people there, and it's going to cause a big risk. I just can't understand why they want to go forward with this and then just make it unsafe for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about that point, right? I mean, I think what we're saying is every fan is going to be out there. Right? I think what we're saying is there's going to be a small but significant minority, even if it's just hundreds. And if you're playing at neutral venues, they're coming from different parts of the country. The one club that you've got to worry about is, in terms of their fan base, is Liverpool, right? So if we play it behind closed doors, let's say hypothetically, they win the league, right? I think they were two results away, or even potentially one match week away from winning it. If they win the league, you're going to have a much larger. These guys have been waiting 30 years for a title. That they're
how long?
30, is it? Is it 30? Okay. Is it 30?
It wasn't checking. None this decade.
None this none decade.
Last decade.
Yeah. Or the one previous.
None. Yeah. Okay. Right. Okay.
We'll just get the researchers on it to double check that it was 30 years. But anyway,
30 years. Right.
Imagine the release. But you just know that there's going to be a massive. You know, they're not going to get a parade, but there'll be a significant proportion of Liverpool fans that are going to have their own parade. You know, the risk is too high because we've seen it at the weekend just gone. With street parties, and that's during a lockdown, and that's during a lockdown, and we're a much more stricter lockdown, and football is also equally emotive as other things, and people have been waiting for a long time for it. I just don't see it as a reasonable risk to be taking. Ultimately, when you take the population as a group, we just have to say we're all idiots, right? Individuals act generally with common sense. Generally, but as a group, people just go off one. You have street parties and you have house parties and barbecues and people playing sport and you know, it doesn't make sense to me to then invite even more idiocy, because you're just gonna have it, aren't you?
I totally agree with you with the Liverpool fans, because it was under different circumstances, but when we won the Champions League in 2008, I don't know if you remember rightly, but we didn't have a parade at all.
When we did what?
We won the Champions League.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We won another trophy that year as well, I think.
We did. Right, yeah. I'm a year before, I'm a year afterwards. Yeah. but there was no parade, and I'd watched a game in Manchester with a friend, and he was from Nottingham. And they were literally landing at the airport at Manchester. And he goes, do you know where Carrington is? I was like, yeah, why? And he goes, well, if we go there, we might be able to see the trophy, you know. And so we thought, yeah, why not? So we got there, and there was hundreds of people on that lane at Carrington, because it was an opportunity to see the team with the trophies. And they had both the trophies at the front of the bus, and it was great. But I know it was different circumstances, but if that was an opportunity where Liverpool had won the Premier League, and then they're going back to their training ground, do you not think that there'd be hundreds of Liverpool fans outside? Of course you would. People would take the risk.
The risk would be ridiculous. And I wouldn't necessarily use that. I'm not saying that's a criticism specifically of Liverpool fans. I think that would be true of any club. Yeah, but it would be true. I think it would be true of any club, right, in the same situation, right? It's not a specific criticism of Liverpool fans, although there is enough there to kind of go on. But we're focusing on this other topic. But yeah, and I think it is a very real risk at every single match, right? I just think it will be.
And especially Liverpool fans, they've got fans here, there, and everywhere. You'll have people coming over from Ireland. You'll have down south, Scotland. You know, and once they've been there, they've spread back to where they've come from, and it's going to cause an issue.
Not only that, I mean, what's annoying me is that the talk is only the talk of the league. Manchester United could win two more competitions as well as come top four. United could have a sensational end to the season. We really could. We really could have almost... I mean, actually, you could top what we did with Jose this season. Yeah. Because we've been, it's unexpected, because you sort of expected something with Jose because of the pedigree of manager he is. know, I don't think anyone is putting Solskjaer in that same category, even though actually long term he might prove to be a better fit for us than De Mourinho ever was. But we could easily go and, I mean, what, under Jose that season, was that season we won the Europa League and the League Cup? Well, and we finished
the third trophy.
Sixth.
We got a third trophy, remember?
Oh, sorry, Chelsea.
Now, I think the point is valid, right? And I mean, not, I would say certainly feasible, although still a long way to go. And actually, we were in really good form. Actually, the season pause came at a poor time for us with in terms of our form. And then you've got the likes of Rashford to come back, Pogba to come back into that team, although Rashford still isn't fit yet. But, you know, just that kind of potential that you're thinking about in that side. And we'd just beaten City and, you know, we're just building up some really good form and exciting football. And it was feasible that we could go all the way in the FA Cup and the Europa League. You can't always say we would definitely have won it, but it was and we were chasing down, well, trying to chase down Chelsea, but for fourth spot. But every time they slipped up, we slipped up. So, but we were still, it's still, you know, I completely agree with you, but it's difficult to say more definitively for us. But, you know, Liverpool, again, they could feasibly have collapsed, I guess. But I think, sorry, not feasibly, technically collapsed, but it's not really feasible, right? So slight different, but yeah. I agree, and I think we acted quite well as a club during this situation. And
what
even,
if yeah. What if, right? Just thinking on the feasibility of everything. Scousers are obviously, and I understand it. I don't blame them for wanting to force the season back so they can actually be crowned champions. Of course, I'd be finding any loophole I could if I was one of them. But what if Project Restart happens? Fixture lists start getting completed, but Liverpool squad comes down with it. And we obviously, this is a virus, so you can, with a weird incubation period. So, okay, that guy goes and self-isolates, right. Then that guy comes down with it. Then that guy comes down with it. And what if every other team gets to complete their fixtures? And Liverpool don't manage to complete their fixtures? Because if you did that in a general season, you would have to forfeit your games. Was it Middlesbrough a few years ago that didn't have enough players and they had to forfeit? Or did they get fined?
Didn't Brian Robson... No, they got dot points, didn't they? They didn't. It wasn't even just forfeit the match. I'm pretty sure they got dot points. I'm gonna have to look that up. Researchers on it.
See, but, imagine if they'd have just said, cancel the season, you can be awarded champions. Or... actually, we don't cancel the season, and because you're unable to complete because of this, oh, I don't know, the global pandemic that's fucking the world at the moment, you're unable to complete your fixtures, but the other 19 teams could, and then you get dot points. I mean, surely that's got to be a provision. I wouldn't want the league to do that, but I would laugh if they did.
Yeah, Middlesbrough were docked points for failing to fulfil their fixtures. It's not just that they forfeited that match that they didn't attend. They were actually... docked 3 points they already had, so 6 point kind of loss in that regard. So, you know,
so all of this foregone conclusion that Liverpool are going to be champions, there is loads of ways you can lose points in the Premier League.
I think playing matches under different circumstances, so with all this going on, I don't think people would be docked points because
rules are rules.
Pandemic going on.
Rules are rules. I think you'll find.
The rules say that the season should be over by now, though, and it's not.
No, but the 30th of June is actually across the board in England that all seasons have to be completed, which is because the 1st of July is the technical contract start date for new seasons and the competition start date for new seasons as well. So there are reasons why that needs to be completed. I'm torn. Half of me thinks that they are playing the game. And the other half of me thinks they're going to ram this home no matter what.
It's not, I mean, you've got to think about also the time scale, right? They're going to have to complete, what, how many rounds left? 9, 8 rounds of matches left?
We could have up to 18 games left if we go the whole way.
No, but I'm talking about Premier League. Is that, it's about 8 or 9, right? So,
yeah.
So 8 or 9 matches across... a couple of weeks is basically what we're talking about, aren't we?
Yeah.
What that in itself is an issue for the health and safety of players, right? Secondly, so the other thing is, why would players risk it? Because even like we were discussing this earlier, I think before we started recording, but the impact on young people in terms of getting it and getting severe infections, the rate of it is really very low. But if you do get it and you get a severe infection, the long-term impact is unknown. There are lots of cases of kind of lung fibrosis, reducing lung capacity. And even a stint in ITU in a general sense gives you physical and mental health issues for a long time. As a player whose livelihood is dependent on being in elite physical condition, that is a risk that even if it's a very small risk, it's an unnecessary risk to take. And I probably wouldn't take it. The thing is, it's an additional risk on top of all the risks that are already there as part of the game. Like you may break your leg in training. You may do that. You can't legislate. That's an accepted part of your kind of risk. An additional risk of potentially getting a lung disease. That means you can't breathe properly for the next X, Y, and Z amount of time.
Probably that's shorten your life and 100% shorten your career.
Yeah, exactly. So again, there's too much complexity in how you manage this and deal with it. I just wouldn't want to be the guy who's told, right, we're having behind closed doors matches. You need to come up with a system whereby everyone is kind of safe and sanitizing and distanced, except the 11 players on the pitch. Can't do man marking jobs.
But what's crazy to me, though, even if this COVID thing was over with, we found a cure, blah, 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 and then you still have to get these 9 games in a short space of time. For me, it's still not safe with the injury factor. You know, the fatigue of the players playing 90 minutes. They've said what they have extra substitutions, but will that really make a difference over that constantly playing? You see in the World Cup, you know, teams who just play 3 group matches, they're knackered by the end of it. So if you're going to be playing 2-3 games a week or whatever it is, but there's so much risk of injury, you know, and you know careers being over because someone's going to dive in for a tackle. They're not really fully fit. They're going to break something, and it's going to be the end of someone's career. I just cannot see the.
They're going to dive in for a tackle with their face facing away.
I spoke to one of the coaches at United last week, and I was saying, "Are we expecting to see like a glut of injuries when these players come back?" And he said, "Yeah." He goes, "Because we're going to ramp up pre-season almost straight away." He said. So the players are going to be going quite hard. He goes, but there's one thing that we can't do, which we would normally do, is that he goes, we get hands-on with the players. There's massages, there's manipulation, there's all sorts of stuff that we do with them that keeps them match ready. And he goes, we're not going to be able to do that. He goes, and even though they've been training at home, it doesn't quite match the intensity that you would have when you're playing. Week in, week out, or training week in, week out, even if they're doing 5Ks, he said it's just not going to be the same sort of physiological thing. And he goes, I'm expecting hundreds of injuries across the league, just little muscle injuries here and there, just little imbalances here and there, because physios haven't been able to get hands on with the players.
So if you think about it, your hope, if you're going to restart in the middle of June, they think, you kind of have to get players in.
Last week,
very very soon, yeah, now, right, to get them prepped, and then even then it's not adequate prep because for the reasons you've just mentioned, and then they've got to ram it through in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 8-9 games, and that's just for the league. And you've already mentioned FA Cup and Europa League for United, and then there are other teams and other competitions. It just doesn't make sense to me. They should just cancel it. Whatever they do in terms of awarding Champions League places, all that, I'm not discussing that. I'm just saying cancel the season, void it, or whatever you want to do, but cancel it, and then concentrate on managing next season. That would be what I would do now.
One thing I just thought of as well is, in the renewal rule now that if you come into the country, you've got a quarantine for 14 days from another country. Is that coming in?
Yeah, so it's more self isolation. So they'll recommend it. It's not like a proper. So in other countries that you actually literally quarantine in a government facility for 2 weeks. Over, that's not what this is. You come
like
in
like Akon, get locked up. Blah, blah.
Not all the Premier League players at the moment are in England. So the players that are flying in will have to self isolate. Surely.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's government guidance.
So, I mean, so if you say, right, the league's starting next week, we need you all back. So everyone flies over, but they can't do anything for 2 weeks. I just can't see the logic behind it.
It's too complex. I mean, we haven't even talked about, I don't know about the, oh, well, we kind of mentioned it earlier, but like the legalities of forcing players to play if they don't want to, if they don't feel safe, contractual obligations, all that kind of stuff. I just would not want to be in a position where I'm having to work out how to sift through all of those things. And then you've also got the referees, right? Referees, linesmen, or referees, assistant referees.
Referees are paid $300,000 a week, aren't they? They just fucking get on with it. We all know money protects you, clearly.
And they're older, right? They're not in their 20s and what, early 30s necessarily. So, you know, you got that. And then the coaching staff and kit men and everything else that comes with it. These guys are going to be sweating and spitting and breathing all over kit. And then what, kit man's going to go in. He's not going to have PPE to kind of deal with this stuff. I don't know. It's just like little things like that in terms of how it works. Are you going to have separated out kind of spaces in the dressing room? Isn't it just absurd? I mean, literally, I tweeted saying, I tweeted it as a joke and loads of people took it seriously. I said, yeah, when Premier League have announced that managers will no longer be allowed to deploy man-marking tactics, right, as a joke. And people are going, the problem this is ludicrous.
Your job's a bit of a serious one that's also related to the medical world. So people look at you and go, oh, okay.
Yeah, maybe.
No, definitely. That's literally what happens. On a serious-ish note, well, fucking totally serious, let's be honest. When do you envisage a normality returning? And I say anormality because I don't think there'll be a full normality.
What, in general or for the football?
Yeah, in general. Well, I guess there's not a prayer we're seeing fans at a stadium until 2021 at the earliest. And even then, how feasible is that then?
It isn't unless we get a really massive increase in testing. And the reason that's important is if you can identify reliably who's got it and had it, you can then trace who they've been in contact with for the last 4 weeks. And then they then go into isolation. It spreads out. So test, trace, isolate. And that's what you do. And if we should have been doing that already, which will then help ease lockdown, because then you can start going, right, these guys have isolated, these guys have isolated, you guys crack on. And then you start to reduce the spread. You reduce the numbers of infected people in the general population, and your healthcare system can manage those kind of numbers. And then you start to sort of break the lines of transmission. If you had that in place, then I would be more inclined to say, actually, yeah, a return to football behind closed doors makes sense. And then at some point, a return of fans to the stadiums. But I would have reserved that till after you've got a vaccine ready, which is about, well, there's a very optimistic timeline coming out from Oxford that they will have results, and potentially the vaccine could be proven to be effective by the end of this year. But there's that, and then there's also scale up of manufacturing of the vaccine to then roll out in a massive public health kind of initiative to make sure everyone is vaccinated. Like, how do you do it? How do you communicate it? Who goes first? All that kind of stuff. Mm. So it isn't going to be a while before we have a vaccine widely available and people getting it. Once that has happened, and it's going to take a while to get to like 60% of the population vaccinated. You know, that's what, I think that's about 35 million people, close to 40 million people that you need to vaccinate. Then you can go, yeah, cool, crack on, have a few crowds. So this is not a short term, there's no quick fix, unfortunately.
So even if there is a vaccine in 2020, we're talking somewhere in the region of 3 to 6 months for them to be able to manufacture and deploy 30 million bloody vaccines. Well, so where would they be done? Would they be done by a local GP? Or is it going to be like a drive-through, get your arms jabbed thing?
Well, it would have to be a very different sort of massive public health drive, like you, like, I don't know, that you may have it open up conference centres and things like that. But at the moment, vaccinations are done via GP, but that's a much, much smaller scale, right? It's not like you're, you know, at that, and at that point, you'd probably do it staggered as well, more vulnerable people who are eligible for the vaccine, and then you sort of stagger through the population. And maybe you go through schools with the kids and stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't know if that necessarily 3 to 6 months manufacturing time is, I mean, all of this is just speculation, because actually normal development, you would have your manufacturing scaling up about 2-3 years before you even come to market. And then you get to a point where your scale up has to then, like, you can have a product that works, but then scaling it up is completely different. Like, you're going from thousands or thousands of batches for clinical trial development and testing and stability and all that kind of stuff to hundreds of thousands, millions of batches. That is, in terms of quality control and stuff, there's a whole area of regulations and a huge part of the development program. It's a lot of money. And actually, you know, medicines, I've been in companies where our medicines have gone out to market, and because of the scale up, that you have to make slight tweaks to the formulation, and you get problems with it because you've got slightly altered pH or you've got slightly altered reactions to it. So it's not guaranteed that everything will just sort of come through. But as I understand it, all of that is happening in parallel, and we won't have as much kind of regulatory red tape, but then that also raises its own questions. So there's no kind of definitive timeline.
Fuck's sake. Oh, don't really want to talk about anything else after that. I've just kind of been like, well, go fuck yourself.
One thing I will say is it's like an unprecedented time. I know we say that word a lot now, but I've never seen this level of like kind of collaboration within the industry, within researchers, medics, biotech companies, pharma companies around the world. And like my company opened up its entire back catalog of data for researchers to look at to see if there are potential medicines that can be looked at, and there was one that came out of that, which I'm not sure if it's gone into trial development yet, but it was one that was, it failed in another disease, but they think the mechanism of action would be useful in this, so then they can go on. So that kind of thing has never happened before, so it is kind of cool. Again, like we were talking about earlier, it's cool for me from an academic perspective, but you know, it's not cool because it's a massive public health crisis. but it is there's a lot of stuff happening, a lot of innovation. So it's interesting from that perspective.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm supposed to talk about football now.
Oh yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. I went off on one.
Well, look, Joe, it's valid information, because very rarely are we getting truth from politicians or knowledge from politicians. And obviously you're not a part of the work on a vaccine, more the treatment of symptoms. But it's still nice to be able to speak to someone that actually has a clue what they're talking about. And it's not Karen off Facebook. And it's not someone that's telling you it's fucking 5G's caused it. You know, it's actually nice to have a discussion where someone does know what the fuck they're talking about and can give, like, a real sort of insight into something. Because I think that's the issue with a lot of things at the moment, is we just don't know who to trust for your information. You don't know who to trust. Like, you should be able to trust the government, but you're watching that and even going, you're talking shit, mate. Like,
I don't think they know. I think they're in the same boat. They don't know, so they're trying to just put any information out there to keep the public happy, but it's just going terribly wrong.
Well, they're coming out and saying, like, you know, look at our successes, apparent successes, and you're like, what now? You know, the fact that we've got, I think we're like 20th, 22nd in terms of population in the world, but we're second in deaths. And we had a lot of warning about this as well.
But we're a country where we're quite compact. There's a lot of people in the same areas. You look at other countries where they've got higher population. It's densely possible. You know, it's spread out more, whereas here, everyone's in the same area.
Not true. Every fucking country in the world has got cities. And a lot of them have got poorer health than in the UK.
Well, if you look at the UK... if you look at, unless you're in a little village, everyone's in a city or the suburbs, and they're just these thousands, hundreds of thousands of people around you, millions.
So
that's why London's one of the biggest hotspots.
Yeah, but I mean, London, New York, a lot of these big cities. I think there's definitely a case for the denseness of the population. But when you look at, so there were a few studies done looking at this, and the kind of how packed in people are wasn't as strong a correlation for your response. For your death rate as what your response was like, so the measures that you put in place. So that's kind of, yes, that is true to a point, but it's not a reason why the UK should be number two, because we're not as densely populated as the other country. The only reason we're number two is because the response has been inadequate, and that's just simple sort of fact. Per capita death as well, so per million, I think we're about 500-ish or 490. And Germany's got a bigger population than us. And they're at, I think, 92. Austria, I think, I picked these two countries because they're reopening their leagues. Austria is at 50-odd deaths per million. So it's a massive, massive difference. And even they have had issues, like Dresden, their entire squad is in quarantine.
Yeah.
How's that going to? I mean, I don't see the Bundesliga even going for more than a couple of weeks, and then you'll have other clubs getting issues and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, talking about the UK, the Premier League coming back in a few weeks is mental. It doesn't make sense to me in any way other than financial reasons.
But they're going to do it.
Maybe. I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me at all.
I just feel like they're definitely doing it. I just think everything they're doing is working towards doing it. And I'm not sure it's the right. Well, I am. I'm sure it's not the right thing to do, but I'm sure they're going to do it. And that's the fucking nightmare scenario around it, isn't it? Right. Should we talk about Angel Gomez?
Yeah, let's do it.
So you've got two sides. You're not allowed anywhere in between. Okay. You've either got this is another Sancho and Pogba moment, and we should pay him anything he wants and play him. And then you've got the right argument, which is we shouldn't be held accountable to youth players. If he wants to play, he signs the thing, like Greenwood did, like Williams did, to an extent like Chong did, and he'd probably be given some opportunities. Where do you sit on that argument?
For me, you know, we've watched him for a long time and he's been such a talent. You know, one of the best young players I've seen for a while until Greenwood popped along. I've always liked him, but is his head always been in the right place? Personally, I don't think it is. And there's now these rumours that he's not going to sign his contract and he's going to sign for Chelsea. Is he really, really going to get more opportunities to play for Chelsea than he is at United? I just don't understand the logic behind it. And if that's the way he feels and he just, no, I'm not signing a contract, well, I'm sorry, I like you and all, but yeah, see you later. He might come back to bite us, but you can't be held accountable. For the, you know, if he's saying not signing, we can't be at his feet begging for a player who, not being funny, he's had a few opportunities. He has shown certain things in certain games. He's not scored any goals, which he was known to do when he was a bit younger. For me, he's not going to get into that midfield and play regularly at the moment. If they got Bruno Fernandes, got McTominay, you've got Fred, you've got even Pogba coming back, the way Solskjaer's talking, that Pogba's going to be a long-term thing. Is he going to get in ahead of them? I just can't see it. And the opportunities he's going to get are in cup games or like the Europa League. But because he didn't sign his contract and he's been the way he was, they've not been playing him, and they did basically come out and say, well, if you sign your contract, you'll play. Like you mentioned with Chong, it happened with him. He signed it. He didn't sign his contract at first for a different reason, but when he did finally sign it, he got the opportunity.
Yeah.
And it'd be sad to see him go because I'm a huge fan of him, but I just think he's being daft.
Joking, Joshy.
Yeah, I reckon. I mean, there's not much to disagree with there. I think in a certain kind of regard, there is a little bit of that Pogba sort of situation to it, in that you've got Andreas Pereira in this side who's what clocked up nearly 40 appearances this season and hasn't done much. And, you know, he tries hard and I'm sure he's a great bloke. I don't, you know, all that kind of jazz, but he's not good enough and just hasn't contributed in a way that you'd expect. And you'd hope, you'd have thought that Angel Gomez would have got some game time ahead of Pereira when, you know, because he has played in those kind of more attacking positions. That said, I think we have to have a principled approach. We can't be held to ransom by we can't set that precedent and just say, oh, okay, here's a big fat contract. Now go and prove yourself. It should be the other way around, absolutely. And he needs to just, you know, I don't know the ins and outs of the conversations and I don't know him in any way in terms of his character or personality. But for me, as a general note, I wouldn't be looking for big fat contracts prior to actually proving myself. And then the counter argument is, well, he hasn't had the opportunity to do so. But I think you need to kind of, at that age, just get your head down. I mean, you see it. Like Marcus Rashford didn't sign a contract until he'd sort of broken in and, you know, like a big fat contract until he'd broken into the side. Greenwood, I think, has recently signed a contract. Is that right? Fairly recently.
Greenwood did one at the end of the summer, yeah. So there was zero about it in the press. There was zero, will he, won't he? It was put on the table.
Yeah.
And it was
signed. And he'll get a big pay rise very soon as well anyway, right? Because he's proving himself and he'll get that. He's now recognised as part of the first team squad. I'm sure he'll get a new contract probably in 6 months' time if he carries on. Oh, I mean, right, we've got COVID, so there isn't going to be any football. But, you know, assuming they had carried on like that, he would have got a new contract. And I think that's the way to go. And McTominay as well, he got a contract. And I think it's about breaking in first and then doing it. And at the moment, I'm certain whatever contract's on the table is going to be more than he probably would have got if he hadn't had, I don't know, these ideas about going to another club. So I don't know. I have no personal kind of connection to it. I hope he stays and signs and goes on to be a cracking player for us. But if he goes somewhere else, it doesn't matter. You can't set a precedent where you just throw money at a young player just because they're throwing a bit of a tantrum or whatever the issue is.
Yeah, I'm firmly of the belief that Angel is clearly one of the most talented youngsters I've seen coming through the academy. But actually, the last few years, his growth has stalled massively. And some of that could be down to, you know, partially Jose decided to give him a debut very early with only the intention of giving him a debut. It wasn't because he was thinking of him as part of the first team squad. He was just stat padding in terms of how many youngsters he's given debuts to. That's my belief. And then once Ollie came in, he was given opportunities. Was he on the pitch or was he? He was on the bench at least, I think, for Paris away. You know, he's been in and around the team. I have no doubts whatsoever. If he'd have signed a contract last summer with a full year left on his deal, we probably wouldn't have seen Andreas Pereira as much this season. I think Angel could quite easily have taken his place, but you can't. Like, look at the people that Ollie's signing. They're all basically coming out and saying that they're Manchester United fans. You've got the likes of Igalo saying he took a 66% wage cut to come here. You've got players that are absolutely bleeding to be Manchester United players. And that attitude has to be the benchmark of what you want to sign. You know, in the modern era, sometimes these youngsters, they're getting far too much at an early age. You've got to... They're going to be highly rewarded regardless. If you don't pay them, someone's going to pay them. That's fine. But you've got to make them want it for footballing reasons, I think. You've got to reward them with football when they do the right thing. It's not... It's putting the cart before the horse to give him a contract and then give him minutes. You know, it's a case... Or the other way around, even. It's to give him minutes and then give him the contract. No, prove your worth. Prove you want to be here by signing that bit of paper, and then you'll get your opportunity. But on that, and something that I don't think has been brought up too much, although Dave touched on it a second ago, he's actually not been great in the 23s at all this season.
There's been certain games where he has been, but overall, it's up and down. It's nothing where consistently good and you're thinking, yeah, he's going to be in the first team next week.
Not like what he was in 18s. At 18s, you was like, oh my God, this kid is so fucking good. You know, to the same level like, you know, Greenwood was, he was coming through, you was just saying, I can't wait until this kid's been given an opportunity because he's so good and he's going to change all sorts of stuff. And that's what you want, is you want them to build on that momentum and to pop into the first team on the back of that. But there's no free lunches here.
For me, it's all a pair. And let me show you something. I think this is the reason the under-17 World Cup final, which England won. And you look at the players who are in there, Sancho, Foden, Hudson-Odoi, what are they all doing now? They're all on big contracts. They're playing regularly for their club. He was the captain of that team.
Yep.
And he's not getting a look in. And I think deep down he's thinking, well, why are I doing? Look at it. Look at Sancho. Look how much money he's on. Look how he's playing. Everyone's talking about him. Look at Phil Foden. How many chances he's getting under Guardiola, which, to be fair to Guardiola, he doesn't need to play him, does he? But he still does. So he must be at home frustrated. And he's got people telling him around him how good he is. I think he just needs to calm down a little bit and think to himself, I will get this. He will finally get his opportunity, but it's not going to happen straight away like this. Not all players get the opportunity at the same time. Some a bit later on, and you got to think he is small. And I know shouldn't be an issue, but until you're used to playing with big lumps kicking you about a bit, you're not going to get that opportunity straight away because you don't look good when it happens. The first time you get kicked around, you're playing in the first team, and you're not really doing much. It takes a few games to do that, and at the moment, the way we are, we're not consistently good in the league. We're not consistently good in even like the League Cups and the FA Cups. So until we get consistent run, he's not going to get that opportunity all the time. He's just got to be patient, but I don't think he is.
No. It's flipped and flopped a few times. You know, the word on the street was something's going to happen, then something's not going to happen, then it looks like, you know, there's offers on the table. There's offers have been on the table from people from abroad, and there was some noises coming out from close to him, which was, I think he just needs to get his head down and sign it and work hard on being part of the first team. But that appears to have changed. I think the fact that there's rumours of him bringing in that Pini Zahavi as an agent, previously he was only represented by his family, that's usually a big indication. Exact same situation with Jesse Lingard, to be honest, when, you know, you see that he's brought in Raiola. Well, why else would you bring in Raiola? I think you're bringing in Raiola to facilitate a move. I think people's attitudes to Jesse wanting to move on will be different to Angel Gomez's wanting to move on. But at the end of the day, the result is the same. So, you know, it's one of those. We've seen plenty of players with potential that have never made it. I hope Angel isn't one of those. But it wouldn't surprise me if he was. Anything else, lads? Or should we wrap it up there?
I mean, that's a pretty abrupt ending to the show, but yes. Anything positive to end on, anyone? Oh, my team got nominated. My team at work got nominated for 2 external awards. So that's a positive. Well, if anyone you can share in that celebration. What else? I'm now. I completed my specialty registration as a physician. So you know that's a good personal achievement from my end as well.
What does that mean in English, Joshy?
It means I'm on the specialist register. It's the equivalent of like board certification.
You're on a special register now, are you? Okay. It's not always cause for celebration, but whatever floats your boat. Yeah.
The register I'm on is cause for celebration.
All right.
There's some positive stuff there. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm in the Champions League on FIFA, so that's a good thing.
I'm going through books like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah,
I've currently got the I'm gonna get the name of it. I think it's the Barcelona Way.
Are you talking? You just football literature as well?
I did listen to one which is it's called Bullet Magnet, which was about a lad that was in Afghanistan same time I was in Afghanistan. most decorated serving soldier in the British Army. And it starts with an actual cliffhanger. He falls off the edge of a cliff using night vision, doesn't see the edge of the cliff, and he's out walking in front of an armoured vehicle. And the armoured vehicle nearly follows him off the edge of a cliff because they can't see him. And he was out there trying to clear the path and make sure it was going in the right direction. It was an operation I was on, and I didn't know about this. And the first chapter literally ends with a cliffhanger of this armoured vehicle coming towards him, and then it jumps straight back to where he started training, and you're like, motherfucker! I was getting into that. But apart from that one, yeah, it's almost exclusively been football ones. And The Barcelona Way, which is a Jonathan Wilson book, to go along with this Clough one, which I've been absolutely fucking all about lately. Yeah, it's mostly football reading.
All right. No, I'm more into physics and kind of that, like astronomy, not astrology, right? Just getting it right.
Astrology is the bullshit.
Astrology is the bullshit, right? Yeah, yeah.
No, right, yeah. Astronomy is the thing. I shown my wife the Netflix documentary about Flat Earth the other day. Oh, she was shouting at the telly. It was sensational. If you've not seen it, I'm going to throw a spoiler alert in. Have you both seen it?
I've not.
I haven't, no.
Hang on, let me just see what the name of it is. So, I highly recommend watching it because you're going to feel a range of emotions watching it. Some of them are the desire to headbutt stuff, like spikes, right? where the fuck is it? Continue watching.
It sounds like the range of emotions I go through when I watch Boris Johnson's Daily Presser. Yeah.
Is there a cliffhanger at the end? Do you actually find out if it's flat or not?
I'm coming to that. I'm just going to get the title because the end of it is so good. It's called Behind the Curve on Netflix. It's amazing. It's okay. So good, right? At the end of it, they're conducting an experiment. And the guy conducts this experiment, which has got a series of planks that have been placed in the wood at sea level, I think 17 feet all the way along. And they've got a laser. And they're like, right, we should be able to see this now. They've gone like quite far, a couple of miles maybe. Enough to see the curvature of the Earth is the thing. And he's like, if we hold this laser at 17 feet, it'll be picked up by our camera at 17 feet, like X number of mile away, and it'll go through the center of the hole in all of these little planks that they've lined up all the way through. And he goes, if we don't see it, but we hold it up like that, that's because there's a curve in the Earth and it's not flat. And he's standing there and he's got his little camera and he's like, okay, turn it on. They're like on the walkie-talkie. And he's like, I can't see it. And he's like, hold it above your head. And then he holds it above his head and it flashes up, literally revealing that they've their whole experiment to prove the Earth is flat has proved that it's got a curve to it. And then they sort of sit there and go, oh, that's interesting. And then it ends, and you're just going.
Anyway,
it's good. It's so good. They're off their fucking rocker. I'd highly recommend it. Right. Anything else anyone wants to say?
No, just nothing. Cheers for having me on. I do have to shoot soon, so yeah.
All right, buzzing. Cheers, Jossie. Cheers, Dave. Go yeah. Check out Flat Earth. And put any other recommendations for maniacs, like people who believe in Flat Earth, put it in, and I will watch the shit out of it. Cheers for joining us. See you in a bit.
Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.